You're listening to littlepodcast.com.
This week on the Famicom Dojo podcast, we talk about the shelf life of our video games. What do you do when your physical media degrades or your battery backed up RAM dies? Future Retro is about not just one, but two Sega Rhythm games. And we finally found enough money in the budget to animate the female sprites for Pile of Shame. No, I can't let it go.
So, Sean.
Evan.
You a pretty big fan of Doctor Who?
I think between having a audio bonus and the mention in last week, that's pretty fair to say.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, okay. I mean, lots of people are different degrees of Doctor Who fans, though. I mean, totally.
Oh, but yeah. I'm a classic Who fan.
Okay, you're a classic Who fan. Because, I mean, there's a lot of people who are like, yeah, I'm a big Star Trek fan. I've never seen the series. You know, because they're just into the movies and stuff like that, you know.
Mm, okay, sure.
Okay,
sure.
Okay, but so you watched a lot of classic Who. Have you watched all of it?
I don't know if anyone has watched all of it if they didn't literally grow up with it.
And there's where I'm getting into, yeah.
Okay.
So I got probably one of my favorite doctors ever was the second doctor, played by Patrick Troughton.
Troughton.
Trout, is it the fish?
Yes.
Okay. Fish doctor. I quite like him. A lot of people who are older than me remember him as, like, you know, the best doctor. But I definitely enjoy his stuff, but there's very little of it that I can actually watch. I think there's only like 6 complete adventures.
Oh, I thought because now that you're older, you just can't watch it anymore. Because I watched one episode where they were like, they traveled outside of time and all this like weird stuff was happening. It was like they ran out of budget and didn't know what to do with an episode.
Well, that happened a lot.
I think an episode of Star Trek was like that too, more than one actually.
Well, yeah, but I don't know. I liked his personality very much. But anyway,
yeah,
and I like the new Doctor very much. And one of the reasons is he kind of reminds me a bit of the first Doctor.
Yes, and I'm sure that's no accident.
No, not at all. But I mean, the thing is, a lot of these early stories, you know, I used to be a fan of the paperback, the novelizations. Did you ever read any of those?
See, now this is where I think we diverge for sure, because I remember you telling me about like the radio dramas. I never really got into, not knowing they existed, thinking, oh, that Fox movie was the last thing that we saw of the Doctor, and it's just not true. I did end up reading Lungbarrow after that.
Ooh, that's a pretty good one.
Yep, totally non-canonical anymore because of recent episodes, but...
Yep. But still, some of the novels were great, but what I'm actually referring to is the novelizations. So every episode that came out got like a Target book paperback that sold like $2. And some of them really kind of expand on the stories quite a bit.
Yeah.
A lot of them are written by the original writers, and some of them aren't. Like, Douglas Adams never novelized his own.
Right.
You know. But some writers who were regular Doctor Who writers novelized other people's stories. And some of them are original, and a lot of the people who... Our Doctor who were Doctor Who writers later on, kind of like cut their teeth on doing these novelizations. But anyway, I remember I was reading a bunch of them, and I read one called Galaxy 4, and it was really very interesting space adventure. And I remember afterwards, I'm like, because what I'd usually do is I'd read the book and then I'd watch the episode, or I'd read the book of an episode I really liked. They were all at the library, and they're really short. I should point that out. Like, you could read one in an afternoon easily, because they were mainly made for kids, or young adults maybe. Some of them were a bit violent, but they were about 100 to 150 pages. They were short. They were svelte. But I remember after reading this one, I wanted to check out the episode, and then I found out that all four parts were lost. Gone. Did not exist anymore.
I think I see where you're going with this.
And occasionally episodes like turn up again, but like it was erased from existence. And I don't know, just in the world we have right now, there's always been this idea that if the desire and money were enough, one could acquire anything.
Right.
And the idea that some bit of it, culture, bit of storytelling, bit of our shared, you know, human experience could actually no longer be available for consumption really kind of struck me. And it's something that I'm still thinking about a lot when it comes to my main hobby. So I know you know where I'm going with this now.
for sure. We could talk about Doctor Who in specific.
Yeah.
For a long time, but yeah, we should probably talk about video games, I guess.
And I've been meaning to, you mentioned earlier something about how some of the batteries were going out on some of your games.
Oh yeah. So, I mentioned like my Dreamcast, cause you brought the Dreamcast on the show a few weeks ago, and like my clock doesn't work. And then that's when you told me it was due to a battery issue. I didn't really realize that.
Yeah.
My PS2, which I mentioned on an earlier episode also, I didn't bring it up cause it wasn't relevant. When I was trying out my component cables, you know, the settings are working and my clock on my PS2 also doesn't work.
Yeah.
So,
and my Saturn one just died. But that one's so easy to replace. It actually has a little door that slips out. You can plop a new battery in and close it back up.
That's great. That's great to know.
I don't know why all systems didn't do that, but
you know, money and cost. Who was ever going to do that when they're going to release their new system 5 years from now?
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, the one that's really getting to me right now is Pokemon.
Ooh.
Yeah, apparently those had a much shorter shelf life than, say, some NES games, but those are also dying. But
I gotta say, though, I'm impressed. Do you know what I mean? That any game that's almost 30 years old has a battery that's still working is very impressive. Right. You know what I mean?
I remember when I was, like, in the 90s, I wasn't even able to drive yet, and I was impressed that my Zelda cartridge still worked.
Yeah, I mean, I was playing Kirby's Adventure the other day. That's a 1993 game, and the save is still working fine, whatever. And I was doing that, and I'm like, that's 21 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, the batteries in the remote control to my TV are lucky to make it a couple months. Now I know it's a difference for use, but even like when you come across like a camera or something that you have batteries in that's been a couple years since you used it, they're gone, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just there to store the save data. I'm not really sure how that circuit works, but it must not use a lot of power, obviously.
I'm sure, but still.
Well, like in the case of Pokemon, like Pokemon Blue is the only Pokemon game I own.
Yeah.
By the way, I know everyone's like dying in horror right now. But like, you know,
the only one I own is X.
I got that in 1998 or 1999. I don't remember. Whatever year the Game Boy Color came out.
98 probably, because it came out around the same time as the Neo Geo Pocket. So, maybe 99.
I think 99 is when I had that job that I was actually able to afford to buy a Color. And I only got the Color mostly to play my old games. That without
98. It was 98. 98?
Okay. But I just wanted the graphical upgrade, and then the chance to play newer games in full color was just kind of a perk. But the fact that those are dying now, like they've remade this game officially, I guess. But, you know, playing the original, that's like that. It's literally a classic. Like, it's the first one, more or less.
And you know, there are people out there who do know how to replace those batteries.
Right.
And actually, this goes into a question that we just got yesterday, and I'd like to read that. This is from Franco Chan. Franco Chan. I'm going to call him Chan. I'm going to use the Japanese one because it'll mean like little Frank.
I'm not really sure which one it is. It could be either.
But either way, Franco. He writes, I'd love to hear your thoughts on how cartridge-based generations may very well be the last true medium where one may be able to experience and play in retro. I mean this in that CD-based games are doomed to just spoil sooner simply because of the glue in CDs being prone to warping, dissolving, oxidizing, etc. A broken cart, on the other hand, usually just needs cleaning, capacitor resistor changes, re-soldered points, or a battery change. Does this mean that due to this poor medium's longevity, emulated ISOs and disk images are the only way that future retro gamers 40 years from now will be able to play these games? That is an excellent question.
Well, you mentioned in a previous episode about getting linked to the past and Wii U Virtual Console.
Yeah.
And I mentioned in one prior to that about Murasame Castle.
Yes.
Right? So I have that on disk system. And, you know, those disk system games are even worse than, like, a battery backup cartridge. Because those could scratch or get dust and be dead anytime.
And the system itself,
you know, or, you know, eventually those platters just degrade and you can't use them anymore. 30 years is about their shelf life, and that game is almost 30 years old. Yep. So I want to get that. I haven't got it yet, but I want to get that for my 3DS just so I can have a copy that will work. And I'm starting to feel that way about a lot of my games because, like, I don't know how long my Super Metroid cartridge is going to work for. You know, I bought a second Zelda cartridge just to see what the actual board looked like, because the one I have is a 3-screw, but this one's a 5-screw. I was able to open it easily, confirm something I suspected or had been told about disk system games that came over to cart in the U.S.
Yeah,
like I feel like I have to get an emulated copy, and in this case, you know, it's the Wii U or 3DS virtual consoles.
Okay, I guess first of all, I guess we should talk about shelf life in general for games.
Sure, sure.
Non-battery backed up games like the original Mario, they work now, and they'll probably work when my daughter's my age. You know.
Yeah.
As long as you take fairly good care of them, they are prone to rust, oxidization. You know, I mean, you know, there are things, but if you take good care of them, you can minimize a lot of that.
Yeah.
And since they are so solid state, there's no moving parts either in the system that plays them or the cartridges themselves. So, I mean, I was watching a television show on the Smithsonian Channel a little ways ago, kind of The Vault, I think it was called. Uh-huh. And it showed that they'd hooked up to the TV the original Odyssey home computer system from the 60s. Okay? The original one, the brown box.
Wow.
And it still works. And that's just something to be said for solid state electronics, you know. Yeah. And that one had wires all over the place and everything like there, but you know, if you take good care of your stuff, you should be okay. But on the other hand, things with moving parts, I mean, as I took fairly good care of my Dreamcast, but it gave up the ghost last year. Mm. And the Dreamcast isn't as old as things like the Turbo Duos for TurboGrafx-16 are notorious that the plastic gears just the plastic just gets old and the teeth break off.
Oh wow!
Meaning that the drive won't spin, and then you know. But whereas the original PC Engine the little chip cards the Who cards Turbo Trips, I guess they called them in English. Those things last quite a while, although some of them have batteries in them too.
Yeah, that's true. But like, you know, I actually saw a graphic about this several weeks ago. I wish I'd saved it because it went into the shelf lives of different kinds of medium. And actually, CDs and DVDs are like about 100 years because the pressed ones, the pressed ones are pretty good. Like as long as you take care of them, they will be okay. It's the ones I think he was thinking about are burnable discs, which have a much shorter shelf life, like three years to 10 or something like that.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous because those are like ink that gets deformed by a laser, whereas the pressed ones actually have like a permanent indentation based on
now
the pressing.
Yeah, so I mean, but the thing is,
the disk drives will die first. Yeah. It's like what you're saying.
That's my thought. I mean, like right now, I'm a LaserDisc collector. And have you heard of laser rot?
No, but I was, before you mentioned like the plastic gears, I was thinking that like lasers would like warp or have other issues before.
Well, it's actually has very little to do with the laser. It's mainly about how a laser disc is put together.
Okay.
A laser disc is actually an analog media. Yeah, I think I just blew your mind.
What?
Yeah, it has more in common. It has more in common with a record,
sure,
like a vinyl record, than it does with a CD.
Okay.
Even though it looks like a giant CD, it is a pressed piece of metal between two layers of plastic. Now the sound is digital, but the picture is analog. But sure. red with a laser.
Okay.
So it's not ones and zeros. It's peaks and valleys. You know.
Right. Like the audio on a phonograph.
Yeah. Yep, but the audio on it is digital, and that was the base. The digital audio from a LaserDisc was the basis for the technology that went on to be a CD. Yes, LaserDiscs were made before CDs. Yeah, video before audio. That's actually blows my mind a little bit. But anyway, depending on the cleanliness of the plants, the precision that the things were made. Some laser discs have become unwatchable now. One of the common things is a little bit of air gets caught between the layers when the disc is being made, or the glue isn't put on properly, and the oxygen causes basically rust or oxidization, you know, and it starts slowly degrading the picture, and then over the course of years it becomes completely unwatchable. The collector's pages actually list the likelihood of different discs developing laser rot, and like some of the discs are at almost like 30 or 40% of the discs ever pressed are unwatchable now, and different factories had like different success rates. So you know, it's one thing that's interesting is a lot of the single-sided discs weren't pressed between two layers, and those seem to have not, or the CD singles or whatever seem to have not run into any problems so far. But so that's something you have laser discs in your collection, and until you actually play them, you don't know if it has it. You can't really see it. You don't see, it's not like a mold or something that you can physically see. It's when you play it.
Okay.
So I have this collection right now, and some of these I've had for a number of years, and I've only run into one or two discs, but to know if any of my discs right now are suffering from it, I have to play them all right now. And then a year from now, I might have to play them all again to see if anything happened, you know.
Right.
Nobody's sure exactly. Some may never develop it. Or other people say it's just a matter of time until all discs develop it. And the same could theoretically be true for DVDs and CDs, depending on the process used to make them, you know.
Mm.
But yeah, I think there's a stronger shelf life there. And frankly, I think we'll be done with physical players of any sort before the discs themselves give up the ghost. Okay. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, I think it'll be a lot. I mean, I think before any of my Neo Geo CDs stop functioning, I mean, the discs themselves corrode to the point of not being played. I think the more likely thing is there won't be any Neo Geo CD players that still work.
All right, gotcha,
And what scares me a little more though is not just that, but like, will they still be making CD-ROM drives at all? I mean, already a lot of computers don't ship with them anymore.
Yeah, true.
You know, and external ones will hang on for a little while, but in 20 years, will I be able to buy a working CD or DVD drive at all? So, like, you know, we talk about emulation, but really, it's possible that in the future, our only means to preservation of games will, in fact, be piracy.
Well, I mean, I don't think that's necessarily true because of all these publishers who are kind of realizing the same thing and at least want some of their library to live on.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
The future.
We'll we'll never have a problem with Nintendo. They'll always be re-releasing their stuff. But publishers who have gone out of business, where the rights games are in limbo, you know, who's got LGN's library right now?
Who cares?
Okay. All right. All right. But let's take Irem or something like that, like the R-Type series, which were pulled from Virtual Console.
Right. Yeah. Like, what do you do? Or like just games that weren't as popular and weren't deemed good enough to get a virtual console release.
Or take something where Sega being Sega, Panzer Dragoon Saga is a classic example of a fantastic game that the source code no longer exists for.
Mm.
And a lot of Saturn games and stuff like that. So we've got the discs. We can make an ISO, piracy.
Sure.
But they can't put it on anything else because they don't have the code anymore. You know what I mean? Right. They can't re-release it. They can't do the HD master now.
Right.
So when these discs putter out, that's it. Game over. You know, the only way to play the game in the future will be piracy.
Right.
Unless somehow the publisher embraces the ability to rip an ISO and include the game with an emulator for something. It's a possibility, but I don't think it's going to go that way, especially for games that never really had a huge following, because it's a tricky way to go down, and to get perfect emulation is still difficult for a lot of things. So we are at a point right now where the classics, the absolute classics and things, they're being retained, they're being preserved, you know, because digital copies will remain a lucrative thing that one can sell, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even when we switch to all digital platforms. But who is going to preserve the PCFX library? Who's going to make sure that future generations can experience the 3DO? And don't say they don't, they shouldn't.
All right.
Because even if they're not particularly great, just like how the Doctor Who episodes were wiped because people went, they're black and white, nobody's going to care about these in the future.
Hmm.
That type of mentality leads to the destruction of culture. You know what I mean?
Right.
These buildings are old, let's tear them down. These, you know, there's so many movies from the golden age of film that have been lost, just gone. Old TV shows, things like that. I mean, I think it's tragic, and I really don't want that to happen to video games. And you know what? To be perfectly honest, it probably won't happen in my lifetime. I think within the course of my lifetime, there'll be enough enthusiast community that will find a way to keep these games going. But hundreds of years from now, I don't know.
Yeah, I've never had a ton of faith in the publishers being the ones to do this preservation. And you know, I'm starting to question my anti emulation stance because of practical issues like these.
Yeah.
Because you know, 10, 15 years ago, it was easy to go like, oh, just play on the original system.
Yeah.
But, you know, increasingly that's going to become more and more difficult.
There is something to be said for playing a video game with the controller it was meant to be played with, on the hardware it was meant to be played with. There is something that brings through all the senses. And I've told you that I've very much been enjoying playing Link to the Past on my Wii U Virtual Console because of convenience, because of things like that. But if I had the choice ahead of me, I would definitely play it on a Super Nintendo with the original controller in a heartbeat.
Well, there is a way to get close to that experience, assuming you can get one.
Okay.
I'm sure you've heard of the Retron 5.
My Super Nintendo games just committed suicide. They just leapt from my shelf.
No!
Oh my god! No, that's not real. That's not real. One of the games that fell down was Lemmings. Oh, God. Oh, that's funny. Okay, sorry. Let's get back to it.
So, I mean, I've heard mixed reports on how well this works. But theoretically, one should be able to load up a game that has a battery backup save and then just save your game onto the Retron 5 instead. Now, I've heard that this actually corrupts the save on the cartridge.
It not always, but it has the potential to. It has the potential to. But
since it's going to die anyway, you might as well do it.
But the thing is, but it creates a save state on the system itself, the Retron 5, which theoretically with future iterations of hardware like that could be backed up. I think you can back them up on an SD card or stuff like that. I'm just, I know.
But you have to be able to get one first, isn't it?
You have to be able to get one. And even then, it's an imperfect solution. But right. That's one way to get around battery backups.
We're not at that crossroads yet, but I see it on the horizon, and it does frighten me.
Right now, I'm looking at my shelf of Famicom Disk System games. Right now,
right.
And Famicom Disk System is a love of mine. I think it was a great system. I love the sound. I love the fact that it's obscure. That most games that I load up to it are a new experience for me. Even though it's something familiar, it's Nintendo, but it's a new experience for me because it's a game I've played before, but with better sound or different levels. Or it's a game that never made it over because of the hardware required, but of that era that I loved so much. But I'm looking at them now, and I haven't tested them since last year. How many of them still even work?
Oh, that's frightening. You know?
Every time I go, I have over 300 Disk System games right now.
Oh wow!
And about once every year or 2 years, I go through and I test them all out. And every time, there's at least one that's puttered out, and it breaks my heart. Now I can put those bits back on. There's disk copying things out there.
Yeah,
I can put those bits back on, but eventually. It's just gonna the brittleness of the magnetic media, you know, they won't last forever.
You know, and as Famicom Dojo, like our part of our goal has been to like attract people to these games, and if they become unplayable or you can't find them, or all these issues continue to pile up, then like what are we doing? You know, one of the things that we didn't do, and I don't know if this is a conscious decision necessarily, was we don't really show a lot of gameplay. And
no.
You know, with rules that like YouTube's been put into place and other things that have been popping up since then, you know, it makes it harder and harder to incentivize that. But you know, what about these more obscure games that aren't gonna get a virtual console release? Like the only way they're gonna live on without the advent of someone getting a ROM copy, I'm sure. A lot of these cases is true. How else are you going to see this stuff? You're just going to be able to watch a video. It's going to be a pure archaeology at this point, like a fossil. An imprint left of the actual game, but not the actual game itself.
Yeah, it's weird, right? I mean, this physical media that we collect, that we treasure, has a bit of a shelf life. I am in the process of putting all my disc games, my CD-based games, and my Famicom cartridge in small, clear plastic. Keep dust and moisture off of them as much as I can. Keep the label, and as much as it makes the room even gloomier, I usually have curtains over the window and have the lights off most of the time, so that the labels themselves don't get exposed to sun damage, you know. But I don't know. Games are meant to be played, so
Right.
I wish publishers would, because that's the thing. Someone owns the rights to almost everything. You know, even if a company goes out of business, someone usually owns or could inquire to own the rights to a lot of these games, and to transfer them to something more permanent, or, you know, they would be able to do that. It's just that there's no cash incentive for them to do it, and that makes me sad.
Right. I mean, I think of like Project M. I think of I guess with the Retron 5, there are already like ROM hacks for, you know,
Oh, yeah.
the backups that they do make, you know, the and it's like it's going to be up to this community to actually do anything about it, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, but where are we in an industry when I have a lot more faith in the preservation abilities of pirates than I do of publishers?
Right.
And that saddens me, but at the same time, at least someone's preserving it. And this will sound like a kind of strange statement, but even if I can't play it, I just want to know that it still exists. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I know some of these people, what they're doing is they're ripping all these ROMs, but this angers a lot of people. Some of them are keeping the ROM images on hard drives and places somewhere, but they're not putting links out. They're not releasing it to the public.
Right.
They're just keeping an archive of it, you know, for future research, future generations,
For
stuff like that.
future retro.
Indeed. And hats off, but I don't know. Until video games are actually recognized as art or culture and not just as toys, I think it's going to be very hard for people to care enough. And the publishers themselves are very much are against this. They want you very much to use them as disposable products. They don't want you to hold. They don't release the roster update for Madden because they want to sell you the new one, even if the only thing that's changed is the roster.
Right.
Although that goes into DLC, and I don't like that either. But I mean, the thing is, like these games are made to be disposable. So a lot of the materials that the cartridges are made of, and the non-replaceable batteries and stuff like that, there was no idea when they were being made that people would want or need to preserve these in the future.
Not to mention there are different kinds of games being made these days that aren't like one single thing. Like Candy Crush is constantly being added to. MMOs, occasionally will change their world in a permanent way, so the previous one doesn't exist anymore. You know, there's no one definitive iteration because it's like constant tiny little update. It's like a living, breathing organism, and not just like this frozen snapshot in time that had to deliver perfect day one.
Well, for me, that's why I don't think Candy Crush will ever will ever be considered something worth preserving.
Yeah, that's all holds up a discussion. But I mean, I don't think that games are going to definitely go in this direction where they're, aren't specific versions anymore. But the technology allows those kinds of games to exist.
Oh, definitely.
And how and what do you preserve if you're going to preserve anything? Like, if someone wants to play World of Warcraft 20 years from now, they either can't, or it's not going to be a version they would necessarily recognize.
Well, yeah, I understand that. Yeah. Or even, hats off to Nintendo for making DLC in a way that is a reasonable price and very content rich. I appreciate that. But 20 years from now, you won't be able to race as Link.
Oh, man. All right. I think we should talk about a future retro then, because this is a good segue.
You're right. Yeah. Let's do that.
Okay. So what do you have for this week?
Oh, I got a good one. A good one. So good that I have to keep in mind whether I've mentioned it before. I hope I haven't, but if not, it's worth mentioning again. It's Rez.
Yeah, I don't think you have mentioned it before.
Rez has special meaning for me, because it was kind of the last of an era. Like, it was a Sega produced game, and it was the first Sega game that was multi-platform. It was released on Dreamcast and PlayStation 2 on the same day.
Which is good, because I think the PS2 version is the one I've actually played.
The PS2 version got an American release. The Dreamcast version came out in Europe and in Japan, but it got no US release.
Okay.
So actually, my first experience playing Rez was actually playing the European version, which is interesting, because Ben had it. He imported it, but it came out, and a lot of people say that the Dreamcast one had a better frame rate or something. I mean, it was a Dreamcast game first; it was ported, But if you don't know what this is it's a musical techno wireframe shooter. It plays a lot like Panzer Dragoon, actually, in the way of homing in on different enemies, but by shooting the enemies and the homing in sound itself, everything's accompanied by beats, by sound effects, so you're creating these soundscapes as you play. And the graphics are simple because they're wireframe, but they're very like trippy and psychedelic, and they become more filled in as the game goes on. Like, it starts out with a simple wireframe, but as the music keeps building, the graphics become polygons, and it just builds upon itself, and these simple things really turn into just amazing things by the time you hit a boss battle or something. It's a great game. It's really good, and it got a lot of publicity for a dumb reason. You know about this, right?
I possibly do, but I've probably blocked it out of my mind for various reasons.
Okay. The PlayStation 2 version came with an adapter.
Oh,
you follow me now,
yeah.
Right? I mean, it was only the special edition. The regular edition didn't.
Oh, it was special, all right.
It was called the Transvibrator. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to say that it's just a badly chosen Japanese name, but
no.
It was a USB is about the size of a smartphone, a little smaller, smooth, and it came with a slip cover, which is not a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
Easy to clean. But anyway.
It was basically one of the names for it was the girlfriend controller.
Yeah, and it didn't help that at the time, I don't remember what site this was. It's probably down now, but we could search for it, I suppose. But a female video game writer at the time reviewed the game and that aspect of it. And it was a popular article. it got a lot of hints. It put that site kind of on the map. I guess not enough that I remember what it is off the top of my head. But I remember that it included like a photo, nothing that explicit, but that it was put in that area, not in, but near. Anyway, and talking about how much it enhanced the gameplay and the experience of playing it, that her boyfriend was playing the game at the time and she was experiencing it through that way.
Mm-hmm.
I have the limited edition. I don't have any stories to share there other than it's surprisingly powerful how much it vibrates. And I was trying to find a way to use it that wasn't that way. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, how could... Now, I put it under the couch cushion I was sitting on. Didn't really work because that doesn't work. I put it in my pocket, but that's getting really close to the other way to use it. You can't hold it in your hand while it's playing, while you're playing the game, because you have to hold the controller, which controllers have vibration functions as well. The Dreamcast version would vibrate the controller, which I thought was a...
Aren't you supposed to, like, put it on your back or something? Like, that was part of the
cord isn't long enough. Like, that's the thing. It doesn't have any attachments to attach. You could, and actually that would be a pretty good way to play it. What I finally found out at the end was if I used some pieces of tape and put it like right over where my heart is, basically, it has pretty powerful shaking, and it was really cool, actually, to tell you the truth, a good way to play this game. But frankly, it wasn't that much better than playing it with the controller that vibrates. You know what I mean?
Right.
So now it's overstated this thing, because that was only part of a limited edition that only had a couple thousand copies made. It was far outsold by the regular edition, which just included the game. And the Dreamcast edition didn't have any of those strange things. And I think that the sad thing is when you mention Rez, and we even did this in one of our Famicom Dojo videos, where we had a gamer at home mentioning Rez.
Yeah.
You know, and he was actually holding the version with the transvibrator in that video. But anyway, you know, it was a funny joke. But what I don't like was that the game itself is really, really good. And I don't like that it's only being remembered for this. It's a fantastic game, and everybody should play it. It's cheap to get on the PlayStation 2. The Dreamcast one is actually quite expensive these days. It can go for around 40, 50 bucks. Maybe because of people, you know, wanting to seek out the superior version. And it never got reprinted, unlike the PlayStation 2 versions, which came out in several editions.
Yeah, you can get Rez in an HD version on Xbox Live Arcade and probably PSN, I would imagine.
Yes. And I'm sure that with USB you could emulate it on a computer and make some kind of... You know what? Let's...
I actually like this game a lot, I didn't kind of get it at first, but one thing that did stick out at me was it's a lot like Lawnmower Man.
Oh yeah, because you're kind of flying through the air like that. Yeah.
And there's an actual Lawnmower Man PC game that I played, not just a little bit, and it reminded me of that a lot as well. But I was super into it, and there was a quasi spiritual sequel that came out, Child of Eden, I think.
Yes.
And I played a bit of that, and it was a very, very welcome addition to the genre. So I'm very much a fan of this game. Someone had lent me their I bought a Japanese PS2 copy because it was super cheap. But I think I eventually bought the HD one because I could play it, you know, on my Xbox instead, because my Japanese PS2 has been very wonky with the CD case.
Yeah. Well, it came out in America for the PS2, I believe.
I know, but I think at the time it was still kind of expensive, so
it might still be now. Actually, it's really cheap in Japan though, like $5.
Right, that's
cheap.
Why I got it, because it's like, all right, I'm buying this. It's, you know, the music isn't any different, so
yeah.
Well, mine is also a music game, also apparently by Sega. I didn't realize that Rez was a Sega game when it came out. But
okay, what's yours?
Well, weirdly, it's by Sonic Team. You may have heard of it. Samba de Amigo.
Oh, yes, yes.
I actually did a video about it, actually the Wii version that came out. For
I'm sorry.
Come on. Yeah, I know. It wasn't that great. For the Powit Keep Playing series.
Yeah.
This was a game that I played the original around the time it came out. Those controllers were really expensive. You had to spend like $100 per controller, I believe.
It was more. It was 120.
Oh my gosh. So, you know, our aforementioned friend Ben got a couple of these controllers and like, you know, one winter at school we played it like every day for a month. And I got the buffest arms. I think it's a picture. But like I got really good at that game. Like you know, he was always better, but it was like him and me battling for dominance, and he, you know, won out more or less. But then the Samba 2000 edition came out. 2001? 2000.
I think it's 2000.
And it was a sequel, had pretty much all the songs of the original, improved.
And a bunch more.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and a bunch more, and improved some of the modes. Like there was, there were a lot of two player modes. One of them was like they kind of replaced a battle mode with like a love, or no, it was the same kind of mode.
Couples mode.
And it had to do like how well you played together had to do with your compatibility. And Ben and I were so good that we got over 100% every time.
Yeah, and it puts all these hearts on the screen. That thing, wasn't that a bit awkward?
Nah.
Yeah. But I liked hustle mode.
Oh, there was the hustle mode. That was new. Yeah. So in addition to actually doing the shaking and the different patterns, you actually had to move the maracas from like one zone to the next in this hexagonal pattern. So I was hoping like the Wii version would be a lot like that, but the Wii version can't do what that game did. And the reason like those controllers would die is because they were ultrasound based, and something would happen over time where it just could not detect your position anymore.
Yeah.
So sad. And, so sad. I so mean, expensive.
You had the sensor on the pad itself, and it would detect how high up the controller was and also its basic proximity. It was very kind of interesting system at the time, and the sad part is the kind of ironic thing is once Wii Motion Plus came out, those controllers have that kind of thing built in to detect evolution. And if they would have just waited a year to port that game, they could have supported those controllers, and it would have worked.
Yeah, because that was one of the big things. Like, you know, there's a lot of motion involved. It was very precise, and you know, crossing left to right was a big deal in like super hard mode, which was kind of a quasi secret mode. And like the Wii version, it was just all position based, and you just could not play the same way. All my instincts were wrong, and I couldn't deal with it. Now, this ties into our topic in a couple of important ways. One, because these controllers are dying, you can play on a D-pad and like the diamond face buttons, but what's the point, basically? Yeah. You need these maracas. And last time I was in Japan, I bought a couple of sets because, you know, I knew that they would be good for a while. But honestly, I haven't really had the courage to break them up because
I have my using set right now, and I have my keep in box set for the future.
I'm worried about it. It's like you can't really play this game in the future. Plus, there's DLC, but it's all on disc DLC. So you can probably hack your VMU to unlock the games. Yep. I don't need to because you know, I actually used Sega Net back in the day to get everything unlocked. And you didn't have to pay anything. You just had to connect to their online service, which doesn't exist anymore. So even if I could find a broadband adapter or some dial-up number that still worked out there, I couldn't go to SegaNet and unlock these games, some of these titles anymore.
No.
So there's that too. So between those two things, it's going to be impossible to replicate this game experience too far into the future. So its inclusion in future retro just seems a little, well, the future isn't really applicable. The present's fairly applicable.
Wow.
This episode has been kind of depressing so far, so I kind of don't want to talk about Pile of Shame, but
Yeah, me neither. Let's just do a mailbag instead.
Well, I do want to talk about one thing.
All right. Go ahead.
I was playing Child of Light.
Okay.
I loved it. Not to confuse with Child of Eden, which I mentioned earlier.
Yes.
This is a game made by Ubisoft that is actually based off of the Rayman Legends engine.
Yes, the Ubi Art engine.
Yeah. So despite being based off of a platformer's engine, there's a platforming area, but really it's just to facilitate the encounters you'll have, and it's really an RPG.
I need to play that. I do. I just,
it's so artsy.
It's on my pile of shame too.
It's so beautiful. I didn't really want to play an RPG, but I don't mind it because of those factors. And somehow, despite not being able to put them into Assassin's Creed, they were able to animate females.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I had to get that dig in there.
You know, the thing is, I hate that we have to make fun of Ubisoft, because when it comes to games that had strong female protagonists, two of the best examples I know of are from Ubisoft. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Child of Light right there, and Beyond Good and Evil.
Right. Oh, God.
See, it's just, but I think it's that the team that was led by, what is it, Ansel? Is it Ansel?
I don't know.
But the Rayman guy, you know, he did Beyond Good and Evil as well. Okay. You know, I think there's a team there that's just really good, and then the rest of them are just pooping out Assassin's Creeds. Confession.
Okay.
You know what? Let's meld this into my pile of shame.
Okay.
Let's do this. I have never played an Assassin's Creed game.
That's okay. I think that's okay.
And I had every intention to, except that I realized with this current, just this one generation, there are 7 Assassin's Creed games. 7. And
yeah, I suppose.
It looks like this next generation will have even more. I mean, like, there's going to be like 2 released like this year, you know. And this is not even including I guess it's including the console spin-offs, but it's not including the mobile spin-offs, the card games, the blah blah blah. Like, they're just it must be really good if they're able to squeeze this much from people. So people listening, can I just pick up a series in the middle or something? Is it one that continues on?
There's a story, and I guess from 1 to 2, that's where it really kind of takes a big turn. I've only really played it for the multiplayer, and of course, as you know, they release new additions, then the multiplayer on the previous ones dries up, or is non-existent on the Wii U entirely, as I found out. For $20. So I've never played a first player campaign, but there's something about the overarching story that it's not just set in the historical setting. That's all I'm going to say about it. I don't know where, if you can pick it up in the middle. You can,
like,
certainly for the multiplayer experience, but
no interest in multiplayer at all. Especially not that I'd probably be playing it on the Wii U, there's probably no multiplayer experience.
Okay.
I'm interested in 4. Looks good. It looks fun. It's about pirates and stuff. That looks fun to me.
Right.
And I think is that the one about the American Revolution?
I believe so. Yes.
4 or is it, you know, that looks
Wait,
really
no,
that looks
four,
really
4 is Black Flag. It's pirate based. Is the revolution?
Pirates. Okay. Isn't there,
man,
a revolution?
I don't even No. There's a bunch. There's like non-numbered ones. There's like,
yeah, I'm sure.
Brotherhood and,
well, whichever one. Liberation is the PSP one, or the PS Vita one. Maybe that's the one about the American
with a female protagonist.
Even see, there's Ubi again. I just, anyway. Tell me if it's worth just skipping this series. I feel like I'm missing out on something, because people seem so excited about the new iterations of this game, and I never really understood it. I have an Xbox 360. I have a PlayStation 3. I could start from the beginning. I just don't think I'd ever have the time. And the one that looks good to me right now is 4. That looks like a game that would be fun to play, but if I have to play through 3 or I don't even know, are the spinoffs needed for the report? So, like, yeah, I don't know. So listeners, tell me, yay or nay, Assassin's Creed. What am I missing out on? The Shakespeare of our time, or should I just shut up and finish Shovel Knight?
You know, I failed to mention why I stopped playing Child of Light.
Oh, please tell us.
And
tell
I think it's because games like Shovel Knight came out.
Yeah.
Or Mario Kart 8, like something new came out. That's basically the reason I stopped playing most games. Is that something else comes up, and like with my limited time, I just switched gears, and then I'm like, oh shoot, I forgot that I was in the middle of this other one.
Well, the better question is, what was bad about it that you didn't feel the need to jump back when you finished those games?
Nothing was bad about it at all. I just really enjoyed it. I just
Well, then shame, and that's exactly what this part is about.
Entirely shame.
Because you should finish good games. Shame. Shame.
It's a very, very, very good game. All right.
And I should play it. So shame on me too. Okay. Mailbag.
So what should we call it? Like a Famicom Denshi mailbag? Denshi mailbag?
Denshi mailbag. Yeah, we can just shorten it to D-bag.
Well, good night, everybody.
All right. So what's in the D-bag?
Nicholas Patrick asks us, what do you think about Koji Igarashi not being able to sell his dream game to publishers and having to get a job making mobile games to support his family? I mean, I didn't actually know a lot about this until I asked you to fill me in. But he goes on to say he's almost back to where he started, except they will allow him to make that game with another publisher from, as what you said, Mink, that he doesn't have an exclusive deal. He says, wary of Kickstarter anyway. It's all in the recent Kickstarter article.
And we'll, should link that article, yes. I think that would help. But I read about this from a thread made on NeoGAF. And, you know, Symphony of the Night is without doubt one of the classic games of that era and maybe of all eras. You know, I think any top 100 games list made, you know, covering the entire spectrum of games would be incomplete if they didn't have that.
That's something on my pile of shame, by the way.
I have it on Saturn, which adds different, which adds extra playable characters, and it's different. But I've never played the PlayStation version, actually. But whichever version you play, it's a fantastic game. But and so you'd think a developer with that kind of pedigree would be able to make whatever game he wants, but it's just in the situation we're in with the game industry, where sequels sell and even a popular series like Castlevania, which has an intense cult following, it's very hard if he went on to say he wanted to make another 2D Castlevania-esque experience, it would be a hard sell these days. Now, I don't know what his dream game is, to tell you the truth. His dream game might be to make the to make the definitive American football game. I mean, for all I know. Unlikely, though. Probably what he would like to do is, you know, something similar to what he's doing. Like, take the Mega Man creator who Capcom gave it a no, so he went to Kickstarter, and now Mighty No. 9's coming, you know. But it makes me sad that someone with so much talent and so much to give is basically forced to hit the mobile scene just to make ends meet.
Well, the fact that he's wary of Kickstarter makes me wonder what his extra reservations are. Not having read the article, of course.
Yeah. Now, I mean, this is all speculation, of course, but if his dream game is along the same lines of what he's making, like a Metroidvania game. Gosh, I really should read this, but sorry. I've read the reactions to it for the most part, but I mean, there was this pent up desire for like Mighty No. 9. You know what I mean? Mega Man was a dead series. Mega Man Legends was canceled despite having all these people vowing to support it, you know. and Capcom pretty much stopped making platformers altogether. There was this pent-up desire for that type of game. So the Kickstarter was incredibly successful. But if someone put up a Metroidvania type of Kickstarter right now, would anybody care?
Well, I think...
Because there's just so many of them.
Okay, that's true, and I've supported at least one of them that's not out yet, unfortunately. looking at you, Ghost Song. But if you get someone who like basically invented the Metroidvania,
yeah,
I think that's going to hold more weight than all these copycats out there.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Just my opinion.
Yeah, I suppose.
I mean, the worst that happens with a Kickstarter is that it fails, which is probably the reason we haven't done ours yet, because I'm really afraid it's going to fail. But,
yeah,
you know, there's no shame in trying, really, I don't think.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's the issue, if he has no other avenues open to him, he should try.
He's thinking about it, I guess. His quote is, "I think I'm perhaps a little more old school," and I respect that. I respect that, but I think let the fans see if see if the market has an interest. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, yeah, it might fail, or it might make not all that much money. But I mean, get a team together to do the marketing. Try to get it out there. Like, one of the comments we didn't play because the commenter asked us not to was someone mentioning his surprise that Sean didn't know about Night Trap from a very old podcast. I mean, I knew about everybody. A lot of the people know about Night Trap, but the Night Trap creators came on recently to advertise an HD remaster. They got hold of the original film used to record the scenes, and cleaned it up, and they wanted to release it as a physical game, actually, not even a download, which was really surprising.
Well, I should have been like a series of VHS tapes anyway.
Well, the original system that it was supposed to be on, the Nemo, was VHS based.
Yes.
But anyway, but the footage looks great. It's high def because it's film, you know, there was no resolution to begin with. So, but the thing is, nobody was interested, because whereas it does have a position as being the game that basically got the whole ESRB formed and, you know, the giant, controversy with Lieberman and everybody else about violent video games and you know, had its place, it's not very few people remember playing it for the fun of playing it. And I enjoy it. I think it's nice, campy 80s. I enjoy it, but it's not a game that I am that eager to go back to. And what they found out is they launched their Kickstarter campaign and it didn't get even a tenth of the funding it needed.
Oh.
It just fell flat on its face. And that just dictates what the market wants. And that's what terrifies me about launching our Kickstarter, because I'm really worried that nobody does want a Blu-ray of our show, other than a couple of vocal people who have sent us comments. Thank you, by the way, anybody who's said that. I appreciate that a lot. That's why we want to make our Kickstarter. We want to figure out the whole thing all the way through. I also don't want to be one of these Kickstarters that says we'll be done by March, and then like a year and a half later we're like, we need more funding or something, you know.
Right. Like in our case, we don't need the funding because we want to make the videos that are going to finish off this disc. Well, anyway. Yeah, but it's just the fact that there are like I think two episodes that just aren't done, and you know, Vink didn't have a camera until recently, so that's another reason didn't feel comfortable making any promises about when it was going to be finished, because we didn't have everything that we needed. So now that we do, I feel like we can do that again, and I think we can start it up. But you know, you guys know our how good we are about getting things out on time.
The thing is, The thing is, we feel we're okay with that because nobody's money is involved.
Right. But now, that would be different.
If we take your money, though, like, we have a responsibility to you then that we, I mean, right now, we do videos when we can, but our responsibility is to our work and our families and things like that. But we would be beholden to people, you know, and so we want to make sure that we do it right. The video has been filmed for over a year right now, actually.
For the Kickstarter?
Yes.
Yours has. Mine, I had to wait until I moved.
Yeah.
Because the last one I recorded at my old place was actually for a video that I'm currently editing and just awaiting footage from Vignelli as a camera. So that was filmed.
Exactly. I think that's really funny
recording exactly a year ago, I filmed the first draft of it.
I think it's really funny how because of the way Famicom Dojo is made, I'm totally done with the Kickstarter footage for that video, and you're totally done with the, I'm not going to mention what the video is, but, and I'm not, just because of how things get filmed, It's very interesting that we have a whole bunch of episodes that are nearing completion right now that are just missing little bits and pieces. So,
so good. I cannot wait to show you guys what we're working on. But all in due time, we'll get it out there. One of those did get released for our WYU show. That episode is no longer available in that format. So blink and you miss it. But as others get finished, we will probably release
those. Are you saying that some episodes of Famicom Dojo have already gone the way of Doctor Who episodes?
No, I still have the Raws.
Okay.
And so does WYOU, I think. I'm not sure they archive that stuff, but... oh goodness. So if one of you lucky people recorded our episode on VHS, I'm hoping to be worth some money someday. Don't hold your breath.
Dude, it's totally gonna be worth something.
I can't say we had a lot of fun this week. It was some good discussion, some sobering discussion, and I think we'll have to have some kind of upper next time, because man, I feel...
Well, let's end it on a bit of a high note.
Okay.
Like, with everything, if you look at it from kind of a Zen perspective, there, you know, the games, like life and like everything else, are somewhat impermanent. So you really have to experience what you can right now. So I mean, if you have a game that you're worried you're not going to play in the future, play it right now, enjoy it, and live right now. Because just because a game, if we find a way to preserve games in the future, just because it's available, doesn't mean we're ever going to be in the mindset again where we can enjoy it how much we'd enjoy playing it right now off the hardware we have. So, I mean, take a look at your collection. Some of these games, who knows what their future is, but right now they work and you can play them and you can enjoy them. And so everybody, once you're done with this podcast, if you're available to, grab one of your favorite games and give it a whirl and tell us how it was.
All right. So I guess until next time, the dojo is...
Available for now, but who knows? See you next week.
Famicom Dojo.
If you enjoyed this episode, please visit our show notes at famicomdojo.tv and leave a comment. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or our RSS feed. Rate and leave a comment on our free iTunes storefront, or call us at 608-492-1923 to share your thoughts. Follow Famicom Dojo on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube to train your game. And visit littlepodcast.com to sponsor an episode, sign up for a free Audible trial, or listen to any of the other great shows on the Little Podcast Network.